The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. And this is episode 389 of the Colombia Calling podcast. This week's episode is newsworthy and incredibly important, well, at least in my mind. We're talking about the humanitarian disaster taking place at Colombia's border, well, with the Darien Gap, and of course, Panama's border with the Darien Gap. We have addressed the Darien jungles a few times. You'll remember our three-part episode with Nadia Drost over a year ago. Of course, Drost won the Pulitzer Prize for her story for California Weekend magazine about that, the harrowing and just so very difficult, death-defying trek that people do from Colombia's side to the Panamanian side. It's 60 miles, but it takes anywhere between 7 and 10 days. And we talked to Médicos Sin Fronteras, that's Doctors Without Borders. We talked to Raul López, who's a coordinator for Eastern Panama, and Dr. Fabiola Pintado, who, of course, is a healthcare worker. And they're both there in Bajo Chiquito, Panama, where the migrants from all over the world, of course, we've got from Haiti, from Cuba, of course, in the region, and then as far-flung as places such as Congo, Syria, Nepal, and they emerge from the jungle in such a dreadful state. And we're talking to these two, well, amazing individuals from Médecins Sans Frontières, Médicos Sin Fronteras, and their work and their fears and everything about this migrant, you want to say flow, but I would say this migrant flood emerging from the jungles of the Darien into Panama, and how governments must work together. First and foremost, the Colombian and the Panamanian must work together to, well, ease the troubles of these people suffering so much that they will travel, for many of them, over a year to get this far. So that's what we are talking about in segment three. Of course, you've got the news segment coming up, and this is a huge thank you. And I mean, I'm really touched. We are both really touched, Emily Hart and myself, that so many people have signed up on the Patreon campaign page. That's patreon.com, Columbia Calling, for the subscription news service. That's Columbia News, reported by Emily Hart. For $1 a month, you can sign up. And then you get an audio file dropped into your WhatsApp account on Monday around midday with the news update. And well, this week we've had about 16 signups. So I'm really amazed by this. Of course, we want to make it sustainable and would like as many as you as possible to sign up. But here's a huge thank you to those of you who have signed up. And you know who you are. Maybe next week I'll read out the long list of supporters to the Columbia Calling podcast on Patreon. So thank you again for listening. Interesting times, as always, in Colombia. Never a dull moment at all. I'm going to leave you in the capable hands of Emily Hart, who will bring you the news segment next. And then we'll be back with Médicos Sin Fronteras there in the field in Bajo Chiquito, talking to us from Panama. Thank you again. Don't go away.
I'm Emily Hart, and these are your top stories from Colombia for the week of August 16th, 2021. At least 18,677 minors were recruited by armed group the FARC between 1996 and 2016 during Colombia's armed conflict, the Transitional Court, the JEP, reported this week. Also this week in peace process news, the Public Prosecutor's Office has requested that the HEP open four new investigations, known as macro cases, on disappearances, forced displacement, sexual violence, and illegal methods of warfare used during the civil conflict. These would add to the seven macro cases already open. The Prosecutor's Office has already identified more than 2,000 victims of sexual violence and 80,000 victims of enforced disappearance during the conflict. Outrage in Colombia this week as an influencer, Daneidy Barrera Rojas, known as Epa Colombia, was sentenced to 5 years in prison for damaging Bogotá's public transport infrastructure, something she herself recorded on video during the protests. The sentence is seen as extremely severe and accompanied by a substantial fine as well as a ban on the use of social networks. Magistrate Juan Carlos Arias distanced himself from the decision, arguing that his colleagues had compared Epa's acts to terrorism, making the sentence much harsher, a comparison he rejected, saying she acted with a sense of protest. It's a comparison commonly used to stigmatize and criminalize protest in Colombia and worldwide. Meanwhile, in Cali, the epicenter of the National Paro demonstrations of this year, protesters handed over the last of the police stations they had occupied during the movement. The very last had become known as the Port of Resistance. There, since the beginning of the strike, young people from the front line had set up a permanent encampment. The investigation for witness tampering and bribery against former President Álvaro Uribe continues, as prosecutor Gabriel Jaimez concluded his arguments for the dismissal of the case this week. In September 2011, Senator Iván Cepeda produced testimonies linking Uribe and his brother to paramilitary group United Self-Defense Forces. Uribe accused Cepeda of fabricating evidence. Though in 2018, a court concluded that Cepeda was not just innocent of fabricating evidence, but instead the victim of Uribe himself, who had fabricated witness testimonies to back up his own accusations. This week, prosecutor Gabriel Jaimez, in his conclusion, announced that he would be trying to revive the case against Cepeda, though that case was dismissed years ago in another court and a key witness retracted his claims. One of Colombia's richest men died this week, leaving his gigantic business empire to his four children. Carlos Ardila Lula died at 91 in Cali, owner of RCN Radio, RCN Television, Postobon Soft Drinks, the Cauca and Providencia Sugar Mills, and football team Atlético Nacional. His influence over public opinion had made him one of the most powerful businessmen in Colombia, in addition to his significant contributions to the political campaigns of Presidents Álvaro Uribe, Juan Manuel Santos, and Iván Duque. Antonio José Ardila, son of the late businessman, is Colombia's ambassador to London. Women have disproportionately suffered the effects of this pandemic, both in terms of employment and health. Early maternal mortality has risen by a shocking 50% during the pandemic in Colombia. The main cause of this is that barriers to accessing safe abortions, already extremely high in the country, increased during the health crisis, leading women to seek unsafe procedures, which lead to uterine hemorrhages, the leading cause of death among pregnant women in Colombia. Meanwhile, cases of coronavirus itself continue to fall in the country, now at around 4,000 new cases per day. More than 40% of the population has now had one dose of vaccine, and nearly 30% are fully vaccinated. Thanks for listening. Those were your top stories from Colombia for the week.
And we're back. This is the third segment of Colombia Calling, episode 389. It's a very special episode because I've got two distinguished guests on the line from Bajo Chiquito in Panama. That's on the other side of the Darien Gap. You know, the Colombian side is this Necoclí and Capurganá. And on the other side is Bajo Chiquito. And of course, you'll all have heard of the humanitarian crisis that is taking place. So I've got members of Doctors Without Frontiers or Doctors Without Borders, as Médicos Sin Fronteras, or in French, Médecins Sans Frontières. I have the project coordinator of Doctors Without Borders in Eastern Panama, Raul López, originally from Spain, and of course the Dr. Fabiola Pintado, Mexican, and they're up there working in this crisis. So welcome on the Colombia Calling podcast.
Thank you very much, Richard. It's a pleasure for us to be with you here, so we can discuss and talk what is happening here, because it's really, really a crisis, like you said.
It's really, really a crisis. So, I mean, you're on the Panamanian side. How long have you been running this project up there?
My colleagues arrived probably first week of April, and I joined them second week of May. So Doctors with Borders started making a kind of expo, we call. And we started our operations at the end of April.
So you've been in since the middle, end of April. And what I'm reading in the press is that in the first 6 months of this year, there have already been 27,000 people crossing the border, the Darien Gap there.
I'm sorry, Richard. I think it's not correct. Since the end of July, now we are talking about 46,000 people.
46,000. So we're talking about another 20,000 on top of actual estimates at the moment.
That's correct. And it means that normally the average, the previous and former months, it was around 4,000, 5,000. But if we talk about the last 2 months, in June, they were around 8,000. But July, we are talking about 11,000. Most of them families, most of them children, almost being 20%.
20% are children, of course. So these are families coming through with minors.
A lot of them, and some of the women are pregnant. And some of the women, they are delivering in the middle of the jungle. And the worst thing, Richard, most of them, they have been robbed, assaulted in the middle of the road. And most of the women, raped.
And so these are the bandits, the guides, the paramilitaries. These are dissident groups. These are just the world's most evil people who are taking advantage of the people who are most suffering.
Yeah. We don't really know who is doing all these terrible, terrible acts. But let's just say evil people for sure.
Yeah.
That's the reason why Doctors with Borders is making a call to both governments, Colombian and Panama authorities, to try to protect as much as possible migrants crossing the Darien or trying to find safe routes, because it's not a crime to be a migrant. All of them, or most of them, they have no option. They have no choice. They need to cross the land because they need to arrive to safe countries, because their home countries, they are suffering violence, they are suffering conflict, or due to COVID, due to this pandemic, they lost their jobs or the salaries they are getting, they are not enough to live in this country.
That's a very important point you made. It's not a crime to be a migrant. And of course, you're totally right. And then they're subjected to these inhumane situations hiking. It's a 60-mile gap or 97 kilometers, and it takes up to 10 days. And I mean, how many people are you seeing coming out of the jungle each day, more or less?
This is a good opportunity to talk our doctor and responsible of medical activities in the project, because she's coming from Majo Chiquito. This is the first population in Panama side, and she was there for almost 2 weeks, and she is able to talk better than me.
Excellent. Thank you.
Okay. Our medical team is providing medical attention also with a team of psychologists. And we are providing this medical attention 24/7. Okay, we're all the time there in Bajo Chiquito, and we are giving about 150 medical consultations, a day. But sometimes, when a lot of people is arriving, we can give about 300 consultations in a day.
And so you're overwhelmed.
Almost. Richard, I'm sorry, I'm interrupting my colleague. We are supporting the Ministry of Health here in Panama, and we were asking since the beginning their collaboration, because it's not MSF's duty to do what we are doing. It's the Ministry of Health and the Panaman authorities who has to take care of this and the needs they have when they arrive to Panama. Like my colleague said, the average, it's an armor. Yeah. It's overwhelming. But I can tell you that in 3 months and a half, Doctors with the Borders, my doctors, nurses, psychologists, colleagues, they have done more than 16,000 consultations. This is a huge number of consultations. And we are talking only about physical consultation, but also we are supporting the migrant population in mental health activities. The conditions they arrive, not only because, I repeat, I'm sorry, some of them, or a lot of women have been raped. They have a lot of consequences related to mental health stability. And the people who is surrounding these women, they have been observing what happened, doing nothing because they have been with a gun next to them. So nothing they can do. This is the reason we are providing to them mental health services, medical services, and other needs that probably Doctors Without Borders is not providing in other places we are working in. But we are the only organization who is there 24 hours, 7 days a week. We need more support from the authorities, and we need more support from national and international organizations to be more involved in this crisis situations in Bajo Chiquito. We probably will talk about other points with Dr. Borges is working on.
Dr. Fabiola, what are the biggest, what are the most frequent issues that the medical team are dealing with upon the exit of the migrants from the jungle?
Yeah, most of the people that are arriving to the healthcare center are skin diseases and the lesions that are a result of the journey they have made, okay? Some of them, yeah, they have like sprains or even fractures in some parts of their body. We are also being witness of some COVID cases, okay, that we have been detecting there. And non-communicable diseases, transmission diseases, non-transmission diseases also, and also pregnant women. As Raul have already said, these women that are arriving, they are in the last trimester of their pregnancy. So it's a really complicated situation because we try to evacuate them as soon as possible so they can get to a better infrastructure of health so they can have a follow-up to avoid that they deliver there, because there it's also a small place and we didn't have all the needs we need there to provide a medical attention.
I was going to ask about COVID but later, it seems quite timely now. Obviously you are tracing cases of COVID coming through. Is it a high percentage? Because of course, I mean, it's everywhere.
We only perform the COVID test to those people that have symptoms, okay? But we are not able to say that the average is high, because as you know, the asymptomatic population can be really, really high.
I mean, I'm trying to get my head around this figure that last year or the year before, some journalists I know wrote an incredible piece about crossing the Darien Gap, a Canadian lady named Nadia Drost for a magazine in the US, and won the Pulitzer Prize for this article. And she and her team crossed it, and you know, were with Bangladeshis and people from Syria and people from Ghana, and they were seeing people dying on the side of the pathway. I mean, I can't get my head around how difficult the hike must be. Have you ventured into the jungle itself, either of you, to see the situation there?
I'm sorry, Rachel. We have not. Why? Because it's not safe. And we need our doctors, psychologists, and nurses working on medical needs. It's not safe, like I said. Now, this Robert, I don't know which is the proper and accurate word to call him. Yeah, really near. We know that most of the rapes we are treating in our, I'm low battery. We will try to manage. most of the cases we are treating. And I can say in 3 months and a half, we have seen 105 women. We know there are more of them, but not all of them, they want to talk about it. Not all of them, even if they put in risk their own safety, their own health, they don't want to talk. They don't want to recognize. They don't want to say to anybody what happened to them. But what we know, because most of them, 75%, have been raped in less than 72 hours. It means it's been done in Panamanian side. We know that some of them have been raped also in Colombian side, or even before arriving to Colombia. But 75% in Panamanian side. I'm sorry, I repeat again. We need both governments talking and arriving to a conclusion to protect migrants crossing or avoiding to cross the river. This is not MSF's duty to say what to do.
Yeah.
I mean, they need a safe route and they need protection.
What would you call upon the Colombian government to do? I mean, obviously, Colombia is, has all sorts of challenges anyway, and of course has been reasonably or quite fraternal to its Venezuelan neighbor, the sister country, taking in so many millions of Venezuelans. But what would you call upon the Colombian government to do in this situation?
It's a good question, Richard, but as a medical and humanitarian organization, I don't think Doctors Without Borders should give opinion or to talk about what authorities do or not do. But what we are sure, if we see till today, the migrant policies in different countries have been failed. I mean, migrants continue crossing the world because it's amazing. We can see here nationalities from all around the world, Richard. It means from Western Africa, from Central Africa. It means Congo, Ghana, Sierra Leone, Cote d'Ivoire, Senegal, from Asia. I can say Bangladesh, Nepal, India, Uzbekistan, Central Asia. It's amazing. And from mostly Haiti, it's and Cuba. 75% are coming from Haiti and Cuba. But, and I'm sorry, just one more minute. They are not coming from Haiti or Cuba directly. They started their trip, their journey, 2-3 years ago because of the situation of their home countries. But they arrived to countries like Chile, Brazil. They found a job, Uruguay, and they were settled down there for 2 or 3 years. They had children there with a passport different from Haiti. So they needed, because of, like I said, COVID pandemic, violence and crisis situation in these countries, to start again their trip. And they want to arrive to a safe country. They want to have new opportunities. They want to have a new life. And it means most of them, they want to arrive to the United States, no doubt.
I mean, are there different seasons? I mean, I know it's rainy season between April and December, so it's even more difficult, the crossing. But are there different seasons to different nationalities coming through? So you say, okay, well, it's July. We normally get more waves of Haitians, or more waves, or it's just always a mixture of different nationalities?
Okay, another good question, Richard. Since today, Haitians are the number one, secondly, Cubans. But in the last 2 months, we faced a Venezuelan, I don't know how to say it properly in English, Venezolanos y Venezolanas, growing up. It means that the last month, probably the figure is double than the previous month. And probably, the same quantity than from January till June. The last month of July, they were crossing from Venezuela, double of the citizens from this country.
It's just an incredible number. And I'm looking at the figures on the Colombian side, obviously being here in Colombia, and it's not really being reported. There's a little bit here and there in the press, but it's such a, you know, Necoclí is so far away from Bogotá. It's almost a different part. I mean, it's almost a different country up there, right? And I'm just thinking about it. We know that Necoclí has a population of 21,000 people normally, and it's now at 32,000 people. So there's some, you know, they say anywhere between 8,000 and 12,000 people waiting in Necoclí to cross the bay, the Bahía de Urabá, up to Capurganá, and to, you just know that there's like, it's almost, I would say in Spanish, una represa de gente, so like a reservoir of people are ready to come. I mean, how do you prepare for this?
Well, like I said, nobody is going to stop this. Not today, I mean, not this year, not in the coming years. This is a phenomenon all around the world, and it's going to continue for years. Not any rain. The rainy season is going to stop them. And like you said, even if I'm sorry, a little bit more pessimistic, because now we have crisis in Haiti and we have a crisis in Cuba. And like I said before, in the country, in the past, all these migrants were used to stay for years. Now there is no this option. So it means that probably in coming months, more Cubans and more Haitians are going to start their new trip. Mm. And there is no other way, because they are not going to stay in these second home countries. They are going to try to go directly through Colombia to Panama and United States again. And Canada. Probably some of them, they would like to go to Canada too.
I'm curious as to something you said earlier, why maybe women have been raped in the 72 hours prior to arriving. Why is it happening so much on the Panamanian side?
Okay. According to the testimony, I think there is some point called Loma de la Muerte. They arrived there exhausted. And it's the beginning of probably a point, three different rivers are making a kind of join. And probably it's a good point for that. I'm not sure. But that's the reason probably most of the events are happening there. And that's the reason they are arriving between 8, 3, 10, 24, and 72 hours.
Awful, awful. Dr. Fabiola, maybe you could share with us some of the stories, maybe of your team in Bajo Chiquito and how they are feeling. Because I would like to know if your team is getting psychosocial help, because this is not healthy. Obviously, working mentally with these people suffering so badly.
Yeah, sure. Well. What I can tell you is that most of the patients that we treat, not only in the medical consultation, but also that arrive to take their child or a friend, they share with us their stories, their experience in the Darién, and most of them talk about not only the hard and so difficult journey they had made, but also that they have been witness of people dying in the jungle because of the lesions or the injuries they have, and they can't continue, about the river rising and taking some people. And yeah, it has been really difficult for the team to contain all this information, and we are making our best to provide the best medical and psychological attention. Mm-hmm. Our teams also receive psychological attention, okay, so they can continue making this extraordinary effort that Doctors Without Borders are providing in this point. But as Raul Harald already said, it's really impressive. I have been working with migrants for the last 2-3 years, and I have never seen this amount of rapes in so short time.
Just to add, Richard, I'm sorry. Like you said, it's very important to take care of the people who is taking care. That's the reason Dr. Wittwoder has, since a long time ago, and a special unit we call psychosocial unit based in Barcelona in Spain. So anybody from our project or other projects around the world can call, can send an email, can do whatever they need to contact them privately and to try to get help from them. Apart from that, we have what we call Cuidado del Cuidador. There are some special organizations providing these services to us. And this is really important, like you said. Mm-hmm. So that's the reason, and this is just my last point. It was very important at the beginning that people like Dr. Fabiola came from Mexico, because we started a project in 2012 in Mexico, since today, to help the migrants crossing Mexico to try to arrive to the U.S. border. So that's the reason at the beginning, most of our team was composed from people from this project, because they had the expertise and they had the experience treating same horror or same cases from migrants crossing Central America and crossing Mexico. It was really important, and we were really glad to get all this help from our colleagues in Mexico.
Excellent, wonderful. I had one of the anecdotal things I recall from my interviews with the journalist who did the trip. She said that people in particular, obviously not the people from Haiti or Cuba, but people really didn't know not just the Darien Gap, the geography, but they kind of figured they were going to arrive at Panama and the U.S. is just on the other side. The United States is right there. Is this something you see a lot? Is this the absolute, let's say, lack of information that the migrants have been given? Because I guess they sort of to pay coyotes from wherever they started, or this inadverted commas, the travel agencies. But they don't have the information about what they're going to go through, do they?
Yeah, you're right. But on the other side, I think probably depending on the nationality they have, probably because they speak Spanish, so probably it's more easy for Cubans and for Venezuelans, Bolivians, to get this information from their own relatives who tried in the past, and they succeed to cross the Darien Gap. But probably nationalities from Asia or Africa or other countries, they have this language barrier, and they don't know exactly, like you say, what they are going or what is going to happen to them. And it's true, like you say, most of them, and this is not depending on the nationality, they think they can cross the Darien Gap in 2-3 days maximum. And that's not true. Now, because of the rainy season, like you said, they need probably minimum 7-10 days if you are in a good faith. Because they need, like I said, to climb up, to climb down a lot of different mountains. They need to cross rivers, and this is a problem. Some of them, they don't succeed to do it. We know, because of the testimonies of the migrants, a lot of people is dying in the tank. Some of them, they are buried for their own relatives because it's important for them to get mental relief, at least giving peace to the bodies of their relatives. They face people dying on the river. They are losing their own children because they don't know when the river grows up. And normally, they are trying to sleep in safe places next to the river. But in 5 minutes, the river can change. And some of them, they are losing their life there. So it's not, like I said, they are getting robbed or they are getting raped. Also, it's really dangerous. There are a lot of risks in the middle of the jungle.
So I'm thinking, and how is the reception? We kind of know the Colombian side a bit, but how is the reception of these migrants? They are processed on the Panamanian side, and then does the Panamanian government put them on buses north? I mean, what is the process once they are in Panama?
Okay. I can say there are two routes and two hosting communities. Canal Membrillo is one of them, but we are not there because the amount of migrants arriving there and the conditions they arrive, they don't have enough human resources and economic resources to be everywhere. But we are in three different points. The other host community is Bajo Chiquito. Most of them, they are arriving to Bajo Chiquito. One, the National Service of Migration is registering them, and the National Services of Borders is helping them. They need to go what they call ERM. It means Migrant Reception Station or something like that. There are two of them in Metetí or near Metetí, which is the biggest town, after 3 hours traveling in pirogue. I mean, a kind of boat, I don't know, because they are local means of transport. I don't know how you say that in English or Canada. A canoe. Okay. But trolley is something similar to that. It means that they cannot continue from Bajo Chiquito on their own. They need the authorities and the permission of them to get into one of these pirogues, and after 3 hours, they arrive to one of these migrant stations. We are there too, in both of them, providing the same kind of services we are providing in Bajo Chiquito. It means psychologists, doctors, and nurses are waiting for them in contact, both teams, because in some cases, we need to continue providing treatment, or we need to track if they need other things. So it's really important that more help arrive to Bajo Chiquito, like I said, because everybody is overwhelmed there.
I mean, would it be a better situation if the Colombian government and the Panamanian government organized, let's say, a more legal route? I don't know. Put on a. I'm talking like in a fantasy land here, but with all these people living on the beach in Necoclí and in Capurganá, this is not good. This is not healthy. We are also in a pandemic. Could they not put them on a naval boat and deliver them safely to the Panamanian side? Some sort of organization. I mean, Médicos Sin Fronteras obviously is apolitical, but there must be greater recommendations than do not try through the Darien Gap. I mean, it sounds like a death sentence.
Yeah, you're right. And this is why we were making this call different and several times to both governments. Obviously, can be a solution. I can say that Doctors with Borders was giving this recommendation. We are talking about a safe route. We are talking about protection. The last week, everybody, we have read different news and different announcements from both governments. I hope this is a reality in coming weeks, coming days, or coming months, because this is going to be the solution, of course. Mm.
And I mean, Raul, you said that the numbers, I mean, the number I had, of course, is different to the number that you are saying, like some sort of 46,000 people. By the end of the year, with the troubles going on in Cuba right now, even more instability in Haiti, this, you know, we're in August, September, October, November, December, 4 more months. This number could be 70,000, 80,000 even. I mean, we're looking at a huge increase, I think.
Yeah, I think nobody knows. But like I said, our perception is it's not going to be stopped by anything, by anybody. And it means we need permanent solutions. We need permanent structures. We need permanent people working on this issue. It means everything who is semi-permanent, who is in a short time period. I don't know. This is not, for me, the best solution. We need to think in a long-term vision.
Dr. Fabiola, I mean, with your experience through Mexico and, of course, then the migrants coming through Central America, obviously the situation differs from people coming out of the Darien Gap. But what would you say what is most needed from a medical standpoint, from your standpoint? What is most needed if we were to make a shout out to international organizations and say, listen, Médicos Sin Fronteras, they need this. This is what's lacking. We don't have enough of this to help these people. What would it be?
I think that the most important thing was told by Raul a few minutes ago. To be a migrant, it's not a crime. So to facilitate the access to the medical attention, whatever it is, I mean, like, if you're pregnant, you have a delivery, safe and decent place to deliver the baby, or to have medical access, to have a high blood pressure control, etc. It's something that is basic, and it's one of human rights, you know, to have access to medical services, and also to be able to provide for the migrants to have access to medical services and psychological services. Because, for example, the migrants that are coming from Central America, they have the immigration is mostly because of the violence. They are living in their home places, so they had to run away from there because they have been families or have been killed or stuff like that. They have been threatened, etc., or torture. I don't know. There are different causes, but the violence in Central America is one of the main reasons they are deciding to move on. So having access to psychological services and medical service is something that is essential.
Just in my line. Adding more aspects that they need. I'm going to put you an example. A woman arriving alone to our health facility in Bajo Chiquito without being able to give one more step because she has their own feet. Yeah. And she's alone because the father or the child she's traveling with, they are in the middle of the jungle because they couldn't walk anymore too. It means when she's in our facility, after being cured, after being attended, she needs to get a place to sleep. He needs to pay for. She needs to get probably clothes because she's wet, and it was robbed. She doesn't have anything to put on, and she has not a mobile phone to communicate with anybody to try to get money from the relative outside from Panama. And it means she cannot pay a pirogue because she needs to pay for the pirogue to go out next day. This is the situation. So that's the reason we made the call. More needs, more organizations are needed there. Because all these needs, they are nothing related to do with Doctors Without Borders in terms of medical needs.
It's a vicious circle when they, you know, in this, you come in, you've been robbed, you've been raped, you have no clothes or you need medical attention, you need to buy food, you need to pay for a place. This sounds to me that it's not, you know, Médicos Sin Fronteras does a noble job and an amazing effort, but you need to be working with other NGOs, right? And there need to be other specialists helping out, you know, all of you working together to, I couldn't name any, but it sounds like it needs to be a combined effort between many NGOs.
And not only NGOs. Like I said before, we arrived here to collaborate with the Ministry of Health, and they are supporting us with some doctors and some nurses, but it's not enough. They are not capable to respond alone till today, at least. We would like they have this capability to do it in the future. This is why we're here, waiting for this moment. And that's the reason we are making this call to the government of Panama.
Excellent.
The Ministry of Health has to respond to this crisis.
Yeah. In Medicos Sin Fronteras, Doctors Without Borders, do you have representation in each Central American country? So the migrants, when they cross, let's say, Panama into Nicaragua or Costa Rica, there are people there who can, you know, there are your colleagues there to look after them as well?
Actually, we have some projects, not all of them, like I say, with direct relation with migrants, like Mexico, for example. But we had some projects in El Salvador, and we have a direct project in Honduras too. So at least not a project in Costa Rica, because you can say like Panama is a developed country, and yeah, the needs they have, they are not related to our activity.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, I all I can say is I wish you all the best of luck. This project that you've got in Eastern Panama is clearly going to be there for some time. There's no quick fix. You're going to be there for some time because this flow of migrants is not going to end anytime soon. I mean, so how do you prepare? I don't even know. It's overwhelming to try and even consider what you guys are facing and what the people are suffering and what they are going through getting to where you are. So, I mean, it gives us here in the comfort of Bogota some, you know, it gives us some relief that there are people such as you and entities such as yours there helping others. But I guess what can we do to help in any way? Because surely there must be some sort of effort that let's say the general public can do.
Richard, you are doing a lot today. Giving us voice and to try to sensibilize government, people, population from other countries to re-civilize what is happening here, because we know that till just a few months, nobody spoke out about it. And you know, Doctors Without Borders, we try to assist vulnerable people all around the world, but we talk and we speak what about we see and what about we think is not right. And that's a kind of regime. Migrant, to be a migrant is not a crime, please. Mm-hmm. The human rights has to be respected. So to be a migrant is not a crime. Please, governments from Colombia and Panama, try to protect and try to give a stable to them.
Well, I mean, if there's anything else you'd like to comment before, but I think it's been a very open and revealing and pretty emotional to hear these stories and to hear what you are calling out for, this agreement between nations and this agreement. And it's, of course, it's not a crime to be a migrant. It's not a crime. It's basic human rights is what we're clamoring for here. So let me take this moment to say thank you so much to Dr. Fabiola Pintado, originally from Mexico, but there on the front lines, I would say, Bajo Chiquito in Panama. And of course, Raul Lopez, Project Coordinator, Doctors Without Borders for Eastern Panama. Thank you so much for your work and thank you so much for your time joining me from the field to share this information with all of us.
Thank you very much, Richard. It was a pleasure.
It's my pleasure. My pleasure. Keep up the good work and thank you. Thank you for all you do. Thank you.
You're welcome. Really welcome. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye. That has been episode 389 of the Columbia Calling podcast. Quite a hard-hitting podcast there for you. Very difficult indeed to understand what people go through. Very difficult to really get your head around what is going on at this part of the world and the humanitarian crisis that is unraveling and taking place there on the border between Colombia and Panama. Are these people driven from their homes in the hope of a better life or just a life up in the United States? So it's worth always read up about this, write to your senators, write to your politicians, and so on. Draw attention to this situation. So thank you for listening to this episode 389 of the Columbia Calling podcast. Don't forget to sign up for our news segment, subscription service with Emily Hart, journalist Emily Hart, based in Medellin. That's $1 a month via Patreon, patreon.com/Columbia Calling. You can get the news delivered in an audio file directly to your WhatsApp account wherever you are in the world. So that's a great opportunity for those of you seeking Columbia news via your telephones to listen in your cars, to your walk to work, your cycle, and so on. Thank you again to everyone who's listened. We'll be back next week with more interviews and conversations with people talking about something to do with Columbia. Bye-bye.
Chorro y atarraya.